Think about the last time you caught yourself acting completely out of character. Maybe you're naturally reserved, yet somehow you became the life of the party at your best friend's wedding. Or perhaps you're typically easygoing, but when negotiating your salary, a fierce advocate emerged. These moments aren't flukes or fakery. They're windows into one of psychology's most fascinating discoveries. We're not locked into a single, unchangeable personality. Brian R. Little's revolutionary framework reveals that while we do have stable traits, we're also remarkably flexible beings who can transcend our natural dispositions when pursuing what truly matters. This isn't about self-help platitudes or personality makeovers. It's about understanding the intricate dance between who we are, who we become in different contexts, and who we choose to be when it counts. When someone cuts you off in traffic, what story do you tell yourself? That they're a selfish jerk? That they're rushing to the hospital? That they simply didn't see you? Your answer reveals your personal constructs, the mental frameworks you use to interpret behavior. These constructs function like lenses. They bring certain aspects of reality into sharp focus while blurring others. Consider Gerald, a military cadet whose entire identity revolved around a single construct: in the Army versus not in the Army. Unlike most people who navigate life with multiple, moderately connected frameworks, seeing themselves as students, friends, athletes, readers, Gerald had subordinated everything to military identity. When he was suddenly discharged from officer training, he didn't just lose a career path, he lost his entire sense of self. Without alternative constructs to fall back on, he experienced a complete psychological collapse requiring hospitalization. This extreme case illuminates something universal. Our core constructs create vulnerability when challenged. For many college students, the construct intelligent versus unintelligent connects to successful versus unsuccessful and even worthwhile versus useless. A single failed exam can feel catastrophic because it threatens an entire identity structure. The more diverse your constructs, the more resilient you become. Scientific research identifies five core personality dimensions: conscientiousness, agreeableness, neuroticism, openness, and extroversion. These are continuous spectrums, not categories, with roughly half the variation rooted in genetics. These traits significantly predict happiness, health, and achievement. Conscientiousness, being organized, careful, and persevering, predicts success better than intelligence or socioeconomic background. However, extreme conscientiousness has downsides. Jazz musicians lower in conscientiousness performed better, as improvisation requires flexibility. Agreeableness creates excellent first impressions, but weakly correlates with career success. Agreeable people often earn less, though agreeable account managers excel through nurturing client relationships. Neuroticism reflects threat sensitivity from an overactive amygdala. Neurotic individuals detect and ruminate on dangers others miss, creating chronic stress. Yet this vigilance likely evolved to protect communities. Openness correlates with creativity and receptivity to new ideas. Extroversion affects arousal regulation. Introverts are easily overstimulated. Extroverts need more stimulation. Alcohol makes introverts talkative but dulls extroverts. Caffeine helps extroverts perform while hindering introverts under pressure. Here's the paradox. Stable personality traits exist, yet we routinely contradict them. As a natural introvert who transforms into an energetic lecturer, Little embodies this contradiction. We're half plastered, partially fixed, but remarkably adaptable when pursuing what matters most. Our behavior stems from three sources: biogenic motivations, genetics; sociogenic motivations, culture; and ideogenic motivations, our personal projects and core values that drive surprising behavior. Consider Stephanie, typically disagreeable, acting sweet at Thanksgiving to be a more nurturing mom, or introverted Marcus, appearing extroverted when producing music events for his passion. People enact these free traits primarily out of professionalism and love. When an introverted mother becomes an energetic host for her daughter's birthday, she's expressing her deepest values through counter-dispositional behavior. However, prolonged free trait behavior extracts costs. Research on flight attendants maintaining professional smiles shows significant health impacts from suppressing important aspects of oneself. The solution? Restorative niches, spaces and times when you return to your biogenic nature. Little needed quiet solitude between lectures, once resorting to restroom sanctuary until an extrovert initiated conversation. Better, establish free trade agreements, informal understandings that everyone needs restorative niches. Show forbearance when your extroverted partner needs a wild weekend after isolated work, or when your naturally agreeable colleague needs Friday connection after being stern all week. Don't let personality scores cage you. You're more nuanced than five numbers can capture. Some people maintain consistent behavior across situations, while others shift chameleon-like depending on context. High self-monitors constantly attune to social expectations, researching extensively before job interviews or social events. Low self-monitors stay true to internal traits regardless of situation. These differences profoundly affect romantic relationships. High self-monitors prioritize physical appearance and social status, while low self-monitors focus on personality and values, leading to more enduring partnerships. High self-monitors typically achieve greater occupational success, emerging more frequently as leaders with higher performance ratings. They possess subtle professional skills, like controlling information flow about failed projects, that low self-monitors might view as dishonest, but which prove advantageous. Self-monitoring discussions often become heated because they touch fundamental values. Low self-monitors adopt a principled approach, adhering to core convictions, while high self-monitors take a pragmatic stance, valuing sensitivity and connection. Most people display flexible self-monitoring depending on context. Both orientations taken to extremes become pathological, but in moderation, each fits different environments. High self-monitors thrive in diverse urban settings, while low self-monitors fit better in traditional communities where consistency is valued. Our beliefs about control profoundly impact well-being. Those who believe they control outcomes, internals, consistently outperform those attributing results to external forces. Internals demonstrate remarkable independence. In conformity experiments, they maintain independent judgments while externals yield to group pressure. They excel at risk management, wearing seatbelts, and using contraception more reliably. The Coleman Report revealed internal locus of control predicted academic success better than intelligence or socioeconomic status. 4-year-olds who delayed gratification in marshmallow experiments achieved significantly higher SAT scores years later. Perceived control profoundly affects stress response. At Rockefeller University, participants exposed to unpredictable noise who believed they could stop it, even with a non-functional button, adapted faster than those without perceived control. The mere belief changed their physiological response. Nursing home studies demonstrate this dramatically. Residents given control over daily activities became happier, healthier, and lived longer. Those who lost previously enjoyed control experienced reduced health and higher mortality. The lesson? Gather objective information when deciding whether to pursue a path. Once committed, believe in your ability to succeed. You're more likely to do so. Personal projects, the things you're actually doing or planning, profoundly affect well-being more than personality scores. These range from clean the garage to raise compassionate children. How you phrase projects matters. Those framed as direct action, lose 10 pounds, rather than tentative attempts, try to lose weight, succeed more and boost well-being. The same project affects different people radically differently. Lose weight might energize an athlete, but frustrate someone pressured by others. 5 factors determine impact: meaning, manageability, connection to others, negative emotions, and positive emotions. Self-identity, how much a project feels like you, emerged as critical. Research with high school students showed community projects, spiritual pursuits, romantic relationships, and sports scored highest for self-identity. Academic work and maintenance tasks scored lowest, suggesting clean your room asks teenagers to engage where they feel least themselves. Even meaningful projects fail to enhance well-being if emotionally draining. Project-related stress predicts happiness better than socioeconomic status, race, or gender. In relationships, partners who value each other's pursuits foster satisfaction. Project sharing is the best predictor of relational happiness among young adults. The sustainable pursuit of core projects shapes quality of life more than any personality trait.
We are not one thing. We are the professional and the playful, the brave and the vulnerable. These aren't contradictions to resolve, but complexities to embrace. Your stable traits provide continuity, your free traits allow flexibility, and your personal projects give direction. When these align, happiness peaks. When they conflict, distress follows. Self-reflection often occurs at major transitions, graduations, marriages, retirements, but subtler moments also prompt it. A friend asking how you're really doing, giving a eulogy that reveals yourself to yourself, reconciling contradictory selves during a sleepless night. These moments offer opportunities to reframe stuck projects and recognize when you're acting out of character. The question isn't, who am I? As if you're one fixed thing waiting to be discovered. The question is, who am I becoming? And does this serve what matters most? You have the freedom to reconstrue yourself and pursue projects that express your deepest values, even when they require acting counter to your nature. In a world obsessed with finding your authentic self, perhaps the deepest authenticity lies in recognizing your multiplicity. The introvert who rallies teams, the disagreeable person who nurtures with love. These aren't masks, they're all genuinely you, expressing different facets in service of what you hold dear. You're not imprisoned by your personality, you're empowered by understanding it.